Hi, it's time to talk film here on RN. The show is The Final Cut. I'm Jason DeRosso. Two films today premiering in Australia at the Sydney Film Festival will also be on general release in the next week. One is a Scottish Western shot in New Zealand. The other is an Australian desert mystery, and you'll meet both directors in just a moment. Of course, maybe the only thing in cinemas that you want to see this week is the Entourage movie. I'll give you the heads up on that as well. A lot to talk about, so let's get going. Or to use the words of actor Shia LaBeouf, who went viral with a spoof motivational video this week that he made with some art students from St. Martin's in London.
What are you waiting for? Just do it!
Well, Nicole Kidman's first lead role in an independent Australian film for a long time, more than two decades according to the filmmakers, is Strangerland, screening in competition for the Sydney Film Prize.
Please, 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 help me. Help me. What?
First it was the white ones. Then it was the black ones. Kids go missing out here. It's the land.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
As the title suggests, Strangerland is a film about not feeling at home in country. It stars Nicole Kidman and Joseph Fiennes as a couple whose teenage son and daughter go missing not long after the family moves to a small outback town. But it's also a film about sexual repression and denial, which of course you could take as a metaphor. Not long after it begins, we see the family's teenage daughter, played by Madison Brown, scantily dressed, flirting with a local Aboriginal boy, played by Maine Wyatt, who's been doing some repairs around the house. Her father tells her off, visibly uncomfortable. It's not a subtle scene, but it does announce where the themes are headed. Mum and Dad, you won't be surprised to know, are pretty much in a sexless marriage. When this girl and her younger brother disappear, Hugo Weaving is the local cop who pokes around town for clues, cautiously, like someone lifting up a piece of desert corrugated iron. The town is filled with distrustful adults and disrespectful tearaway kids hanging out down at the ramshackle skate park like extras from a Larry Clark film. But as the investigation continues, the film returns to scenes from a marriage, which is slowly buckling under the pressure of grief and anger.
You're not doing anything! You know, it wasn't just Neil. There's been other boys. There's been boys here. There's been boys at the skate park. Bertie! Do you hear me? Bertie! Who you let paint this bloody house! Bertie!
We've been here before in many ways. An outback town, men who are uncomfortable with their emotions, and women who stand at the curtains, tears of frustration running down their cheeks. First-time director Kim Farrant, working with Irish cinematographer PJ Dillon, often pushes the film into dreamlike terrain, recalling a tradition of outback expressionism found in films like Nicholas Roeg's Walkabout or Ted Kotcheff's Wake in Fright. There's an effectively staged nightmarish scene where the husband and wife get stuck in their car during a dust storm, and recurring images of a nearby gorge taken from a helicopter, or maybe it's a drone, that sets a menacing tone. All of this seems to underline a sense that this landscape is threatening and mysterious, an idea expressed with a slightly heavy hand in the character of an old Aboriginal woman, whose brief, enigmatic appearances in the film add a dash of mysticism. Kidman, who is easily the best on screen, plays the kind of delicate flower that we've seen before, but she's also a woman with a lot of fight. I liked that Farrant's movie shows so much respect for her struggle. One key to understanding this film is to see it as the story of a woman who's become estranged from her emotional life and is searching desperately, sometimes hysterically, to find some way to reconnect. It's a pity Fiennes' character, her husband, is not as well drawn. There's a fine line between uptight and wooden, I think. As the elements of police thriller and domestic drama crescendo in parallel, you can feel the movie straining to carry all the elements, and it does start to run out of ideas. Still, for all Strangerland's unevenness, it is a promising debut from Farrant, a filmmaker to watch, I think. Strangerland has been in the works for many years, and it was inspired initially by the death of the director's father. Kim Farrant.
the theme of, you know, how we act out in times of crisis was inspired for me by the loss of my father when I was 22 from a long drawn out illness. And I found myself kind of assailed with a grief that I'd never experienced before and didn't really want to live and was finding it really difficult to function. I was living in New York. I didn't know anyone. And I kind of was kind of having these strange desires or longing to connect. And that manifested through wanting touch or wanting to make love or to, you know, have sex. And I ended up acting out with a couple of total strangers. And, you know, it was only two people and it was only two incidents. But it really shocked me that I did that in a time where I was so fragile. And so the last thing I needed was to kind of be in the presence of someone who didn't really care about me or know me. I actually just needed really like probably a long hug. but what was struck me was that there was this kind of very primal instinct to connect, to feel alive and to somehow try and regain some footing. Because when you're assailed with grief or you're in loss or you're in uncertainty, it feels like you're completely out of control. Mm. And it somehow was like the notion of having sex could momentarily bring back some order or control. But actually that's not the case. You know, the grief just still lives and exists. It couldn't take that away from me. But it lingered with me that I did that, and that kind of then sparked a fascination in like, or how other people cope. You know, was I the only person who'd done that? And I experienced quite a bit of shame with that. And so I thought, well, let's shine a light on that. Like, let's explore how people act out in times of crisis. So that was kind of like the inspiration for me in terms of then finding a story where we could channel that, you know, notion of what we do. You know, do we drink? Do we take drugs? Do we go into workaholism? Do we, you know, like blame others? Do we become violent? Do we have sex? Like, how do we numb the pain, you know?
How did you get Nicole Kidman on board? Because it's there's a wonderful emotional register for her particular talents as an actress, I think. We've seen her do this role, this kind of role before. I think she's really good in it, though, and I like the way that the film sort of respects that process that she's going through. I mean, it's not... she's never kind of annoying, I think, as she's going through this process. There's a compassion on the film's part. What did you tell her about the role?
Well, I'm just going to answer two of your questions there. One is I don't actually think Nicole has done this role before. I think we've seen her access grief in The Rabbit Hole. But this was like a duality of grief alongside really strong, ferocious need. And that need, it kind of comes out in this distorted need for touch, you know. And so it's kind of like a sexual odyssey straddling alongside like a vulnerability and an unraveling. So for her, I think it was the opportunity to show both of those parts of herself and in a role that was, you know, beautifully written, three-dimensional character, female lead. And then that opportunity plus to be in her homeland in for the first time in 20 years since Dead Calm, in her native accent was, I think, really appealing. And it's a beautiful script.
Tell me about the script, because I know that it went through a long gestation process. There's a couple of writers attached to it. Tell me about how that took so long and what you got out of that process.
Yeah, so originally I went to Fiona Series, who's an amazing Australian writer. She now lives in London with a big career over there. And I had this kind of idea of like wanting to explore that theme of how we act out in times of crisis, but also like interested in families and secrets and, you know, like who can you trust if you can't trust your family and how well do you know those under your own roof? And she loved that idea and that premise and she really liked the themes that I was interested in and had a lot to offer and bring to those. So we sat in a room for a few weeks and we brainstormed an idea and we kind of wrote this outline of this story and set it in the outback and to put our characters under more pressure. And then, you know, she then went and wrote a first draft and then life kind of intervened and tragically her husband died after the first draft was written. So then she was going through her own grief and her own loss and she had two young children and there was a lot to process. So things, you know, took a little bit longer and But there was all sorts of different elements. The script was very, and the film is challenging. It's confronting. It leaves you feeling unnerved, you know, and kind of a little bit uncomfortable. That's what I love about it. That's what I love about cinema, is that it makes you alive and awake, and you leave the cinema and you go home and it's 4 a.m. and you're still thinking about it. But for that reason, it wasn't easy to get this film financed. The combination of the script, the combination of I was a first-time feature director and I had this massive cast, you know, so that was also like I had to prove myself and I had to go and make another film, like a half-hour drama to show like, hey, you know, I've done something more recent because I'd made short films and I'd made television, I'd made a feature doc. But, you know, it was it was quite a healthy Australian budget and we needed to be able to, you know, prove that I could cope with all the, you know, dust storms and shooting out in the outback and big, you know, directing big stars and unknown actors. So I think the combination of those things and a challenging, confronting script that had people having to question themselves and their own compulsions and addictions meant that it took a long time to get up. But I must say, I was very heartened to hear that the Dallas Buyers Club, that got Matthew McConaughey the Oscar for Best Actor last year, that took 20 years to get up, and that was a brilliant script. But maybe it's that some films, you know, the actual story takes a while before an audience is ready to stomach it.
There's still a big discrepancy, isn't there, in terms of numbers of women directing films, you know, in comparison to numbers of men, and it seems to be something that people in the industry, women in the industry, are talking about more and more. Where do you see our industry is at the moment, and what do you think needs to be done?
Well, lovely that you, a man, Jason, are talking about it, so thank you. In terms of the discrepancy, I mean, the recent statistics from the brought out from Screen Australia is that of the films being, the feature films being made in this country, 16% of them are being made by women. That's a pretty low number. So, I mean, I think there's different things that can happen in terms of certain regulations that can be put in place. I also think it's really important at a fundamental core level to look at, well, what's happening in our education system? What's happening in our schools? What's happening in our primary schools and in our high schools and in our universities that is leading to a culture where, for some reason, the society believes that only 16% of women should be, you know, in charge of a big production and a big cast and crew of 100 people and directing a film. Like, why do we believe that? And I'll give you an exact case in point for this. Someone who is a very close friend of mine, a male that I really respected, who was very forward-thinking and had worked in the industry a long time and who was very open and, you know, liberal-minded, not liberal voting. But he said to me when I was going to buy my outfit to wear from my big Screen Australia funding meeting, which would decide whether or not the film got up, he said, I'll come with you and I'll help you choose an outfit. And I said, okay, great. And so we're going shopping and I'm like, I grab this dress and I go, look, you know, this looks beautiful. And he was like, you're not going to wear a dress, are you? And I said, yeah, I feel really comfortable in this dress and it was pretty and feminine and, you know, and I look good. And he was like, no, what about these pants and this shirt? And I said, no. And then he kept finding pants and shirt. And I said, what's going on? Like, why do you need me in pants and shirt? And he was like, well, he said, if they're going to believe in you that you can direct a film, you better look like you can. I said, what? So me dressing like a man in pants and shirt is going to mean that I can direct a feature film? Now, that was coming from someone who was highly educated, who was like in the arts, who'd been like, you know, like having very kind of intellectual, you know, open conversations about equal gender equality. I was shocked. I was like, so really you're saying I need to prove that I can be a man in order to direct a feature film. Wow.
So there needs to be a sort of cultural shift, really.
Yeah, a cultural paradigm, massive shift. And I think that starts with education and I think that starts with things like, I'll give you an example. When you say to a young girl, you are so beautiful, look at you, you're so pretty, and you keep acknowledging her just based on her physical beauty, and then you say to a young boy, oh, look at you, you made that train set, you're so clever. Like, it's the balance of, like, not as many boys are told, oh, you're so handsome, oh, you're so gorgeous, like, you're so good looking. Like, it tends to be that women are sexualized objectified from a very young age, right? And that I think is a component that leads into this, because then you have young girls learning, oh, I'm pretty and I get love and I get praise and I get looked at, and therefore I'll just keep being pretty. And I learn then that I'm beautiful if my body is beautiful. No wonder we have so many distorted body images worldwide, especially in the females. But that affirms this one aspect of character. And not necessarily like, wow, that's so interesting that you assembled that building block in that way, or that you were able to, construct that drawing in that way. So I think it's on many levels, and it's not just like addressing it now with regulations. Yes, definitely that's going to help in the immediate term. But it's also looking at fundamentally what we believe and what we feed our children.
Director Kim Farrant and her film Strangerland screens in competition at the Sydney Film Festival Friday evening, Saturday morning and Saturday evening. So depending on when you're listening to this program, and of course if you're in Sydney, you will have a chance to see it then. Otherwise, it's releasing around the country next week.